This afternoon's keynote, delighted to welcome to the stage Christine Ford and Marjorie McMahon.
I'm afraid we'd have to come out of call and onto that. Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for coming along, for staying for our input this afternoon. Thank you to David and to the Association for Chartered Teachers for inviting us this afternoon. Chartered Teacher is very dear to my heart, and because I've been involved with it from the very beginning, and so it's a great pleasure to be here today and to share with you some of the work that we've been doing recently around expertise in teaching and around accomplished teaching. And the theme that we wanted to look at was moving beyond questions of teacher quality and really try and move that on to thinking about expertise and recognising and enhancing that. So the three broad areas that we wanted to look at are teacher policy and the development of expertise, and then finishing up with accomplished teaching, telling you a little bit about the way that we've been developing that and some of the current work that we're involved with. We came across this recently. I know it's very small and you mightn't be able to see it, but we thought we'd like to share this with you. I'll just give you a minute if you can read through it. We saw this recently. So we saw this recently at a presentation that we were at the IPTA conference in Birmingham just before Christmas, and it was our colleague, our former colleague, Janet Draper from the University of Edinburgh who had this, and we have asked her permission to use it, so you can ignore the please do not quote at the bottom of the slide. And we thought that this was quite funny. I've been using this with groups of teachers that I've been working with recently, and I think everybody has a favourite in it. I think currently my favourite is you must wear at least two petticoats. And Christine, I think you're quite taken with, number four, you may not loiter downtown in ice cream stores. And I'm sure that there would be quite a few of us here today who would be in bother if number nine still applied. You may under no circumstances dye your hair. But I think what's interesting about this as well is there's absolutely no mention of teaching and learning. Absolutely no mention of pupils, no mention of working with colleagues, all of the things that we're very familiar with and that we see as underpinning our professionalism and our professional standards here in Scotland. And I think just, you know, going back from 1915, from when those rules for teachers were obviously devised, and thinking about where we are today, we certainly have come a very long time. You know, we now are at a place, particularly in Scotland, where we have a very clear sense of the standards and the professionalism and the ethos that underpins our practice as teachers and educators. But there's still some way to go. And what I wanted to do was just to set a bit of background context for what Christine will later expand on, and just share with you a little bit about the international summits on the teaching profession, which I've been tracking as part of the research that I've been doing. And I think that these are significant summits that have started to take place. The first one was in 2011, and the next one will be in March in Amsterdam. And I think they're interesting and they're important, and they're important for what's happening in Scotland, and they're important for the teaching profession more generally. The reason why the summits were instituted in the first place was an attempt to find out exactly what is it that makes a difference in terms of learning and teaching, and what can we learn from other systems. It's not just simply a case of traveling, policy travel or replicating what's going on in other systems, but sharing and beginning to understand the common issues, recognising that there are universal problems, universal concerns, and talking about those and sharing about them, sharing them. And so the first summit was held in, as I said, in New York in 2011. And you know, it would be easy to see this as just an elite group because there were only 16 countries represented, and those countries were the countries who had the highest scores in the PISA results based upon either they were the most rapidly performing or the highest performing or the rapidly improving. And so it was, in some respects, you could see it as an elite grouping, and it was ministers of education, union officials, and experts, educational experts. But what struck me when I've been looking at the research for this as well, they have also involved what they call exemplary teachers, teachers like yourselves, teachers like chartered teachers. And that's really important because they have a voice here on this international summit, the first of its kind, that they were seen to be playing a part, having a contribution to make, having an important voice that needed, and was the ministers were prepared to hear it. And that first summit was described as a game changer in terms of the teaching profession internationally, because it had never happened before. This was the first time ever there has been an international summit on the teaching profession. And now we're going into the third one. Now, I've been kind of chewing over that term game changer, you know, because as a former history teacher, I've been thinking about, well, if it's a game changer, then is it really changing the course of history? I've been thinking about it in terms of, say, the Treaty of Versailles or Potsdam or Yalta, that really did those conferences or summits that really did change the course of history. And I would say in this case, it's probably too early to call. But it's certainly having a significant impact on raising the level of discussion about the teaching profession. And I think that's really important. I think it's really important that Scotland has a voice in all of this. And that's beginning to happen. Scotland is represented in this through the United Kingdom. In the first summit, Ronnie Smith was there as his role within Educational International. And last year, Professor John Macbeth was asked to present one of the leading papers, one of the first papers at the summit, and prepared a report. But this year, Scotland's going to be represented by Graham Donaldson. And so that's good that we're beginning to have our voice and our input into this international summit. So as I said, this first summit, there were 16 countries represented by ministers of education, union leaders, outstanding teachers, exemplary teachers, and other leading experts. And they are beginning to grapple with some of the questions and issues that we've been grappling with as well in Scotland. And you can see from the reports that have been produced from the summits the kind of big themes that they're looking at. In the first summit, the issue that they wanted to address was how to improve teacher quality, improving teacher quality all around the world. The second summit last year, teaching and leadership for the 21st century. And next the summer, the summit that's going to take place in March in Amsterdam, the focus will be on the status of teaching. So big issues, but issues that in many ways in Scotland, we've been ahead of the game. We're tackling those issues, debating them and responding to them. Each of the summits is preceded by a report produced by the OECD that gathers that information about what's happening across the world and the different systems and so on. And in the first report, the Building a High Quality Teaching Profession, you know, they emphasise this important point that for the high performing systems, the ones we want to look at and see, well, what's working there? And the important point that the quality of an education system cannot exceed the quality of teachers, but that equally the quality of teachers cannot exceed the quality of the system. And that's where it's underlined throughout the summits and their documentation that it's not about just piecemeal reform, that it's got to be systemic reform right across the different parts of the system. And I think that's what we're working towards in Scotland as well. But there's also recognition. They recognised this in the opening speeches for the summit last year. There's also some recognition that trying to define and understand quality is difficult. And this was from the General Secretary of Educational International, recognising that, yes, we may have a shared understanding about the need for teacher quality, the importance of teacher quality, but we're not quite there in terms of how we define it and having consensus in both that definition and then how to measure it. And so that then reflects the way that we've been developing our thinking around accomplished teaching. Andreas Schleicher from the OECD has acknowledged that really the world has changed. The need for the 21st century skills that we want to foster in young people that are embedded there in curriculum for excellence also requires different types of teachers. And he describes this as teachers as high-level professional knowledge workers capable of creating 21st century environments. And there's something in there about the questions around teacher quality, about teacher expertise, the types of teachers that are needed to deliver this high-level, high-order curriculum. And that has informed the work that we've been doing and trying to understand, well, what is it that makes a difference? Why do we define, characterise teacher expertise, teacher accomplishment? And so Christine's going to share with you some of the work that we've been doing all on accomplishment and teaching over the last couple of years.
Is this a week?
Yeah.
I'm not going to stand behind that. You probably won't see me. Okay, what I want to do is talk about this thing called accomplished teaching and this project that we've been engaging in. It's funded by the Scottish Office and the General Teaching Council, and we've been working with Rosa Murray, she's one of the guilty party, to try and look at this idea of accomplished teaching. And it's been a very organic project. It's kind of emerged and evolved as we've gone forward. We began with some kind of, you know, academic work. There were many kind of conference papers. We were at ESA, the Educational Research Conference at ESA, a couple of times. And we had symposia there. And we had the symposia that had numbers of stakeholders. We had people from England, from Australia, from the States. But we also had stakeholders from Scotland, particularly the professional associations and the General Teaching Council. And they were really interesting in that we asked people to bring papers on their kind of pet topic around this notion and begin to have some discussions about this. So what does this thing mean? But what struck us as we were having those discussions was most of the concerns were about structures and systems. Most of the concerns were about motivation. We weren't actually getting to the nub of the matter, this thing called accomplished teaching. Right? And one of the reasons why we've called this paper Moving Beyond Quality has been that there's been an interpretation of quality as simply doing more, as simply adding to remits, taking on further responsibilities, setting up systems and structures that have people to do more and demonstrate that they're doing more. And for us, that was not a secure discussion or a secure analysis of what we mean by accomplished teaching. What is this phenomenon? What is this extra thing? Because if the education system can only grow and improve on the basis of pedagogy, we need to actually really get into that and not be just concerned about structures and systems, because most of the discussion was about structures of reward or structures of recognition, career structures, etc. It wasn't actually looking at some of the quintessential issues that we do know live within classrooms with it. So that was our first kind of area. My colleague Marjorie and colleague Jenny Reeves was also involved in some data gathering, and some of you may well have been part of that, where they were looking at what was going on in classrooms, what was happening in these classrooms, where this kind of practice was operating with it. And it was to try and tease out beyond crude notions of quality and crude notions of impact to say, so let's begin to think about how we can explain this. What is it that makes it different? What is the thing that we need to really tease out? And I always begin to believe that you have conversations. Those of you know me well know I'm an aficionado of West Wing. Remember it? You have to be in the room. That's CJ, my hero. CJ's view, you have to be in the room to have these conversations. So that was the way in which we were allowed to have this project to kind of evolve and we basically had conversations. We've had several conversations. We ran an international symposium where we had people from down south, from various universities, Cambridge, Oxford, Harvard. We had people over from Australia. We had people from the universities here. And we had the General Teaching Council and the government. And it was a discussion to try and pin what does accomplished teaching actually mean. Let's get beyond kind of crude indicators of cause and effect. Teachers do this, it has that effect. It doesn't explain that phenomenon. So we really wanted to think about that. And this is not, as Marjorie's illustrated, this is not just a Scottish concern. That's why we brought people to Scotland, because this is a concern that is exercising most well-established education systems across the world. This was something that people are really trying to get to grips with. And one of the issues that we emerged was a kind of the question about the relationship between the external and the internal within a classroom. And it lay around who knows best, where does expertise lie? And historically in education, the expert has been somebody who's been external to the site of practice, i.e. the classroom, often in a university or in a government department or something like that. And so that's what we began. When we had these discussions, and we'd had several national seminars within Scotland, this was something that began to emerge really importantly. What does teacher expertise? We don't often use teacher and expert in the same sentence. We tend, culturally and historically, to place those two as separate. So what we've been trying to do is say, no, we need to have those aligned, we need to think very deeply about this, and then begin to test this. So that's what we've been doing here. We've been producing umpteen reports, I feel it's my life's work, but we've also been engaging in what I've called conceptual analysis. And moving on then, we've had recently another working seminar with people from the States and Australia, from England and New Zealand, as well as people from Scotland. And we're now onto the field projects. And there's a number of you in the room, I know, who are involved in that. Okay. So if we were looking at this notion of expertise, what does it mean? What does it mean? There are several descriptions of it. Some of you will be familiar with this. This is the classic one, Dreyfus and Dreyfus, Mind Over Machine. And that's, I think they've now got 7 stages in it. This was their original of it. Now, our problem with that is it almost suggests it's a fairly simple thing, that it's gained by purely experience. And we know that's not the case. This is a kind of structure, if you wanted to look at kind of career-long professional learning. You're moving from novice, and we do talk about novice teachers, down towards expertise and having that experience. But the problem with that as a model is it's simply almost a time-served one. It doesn't allow us to actually look really hard at this notion of teacher expertise. It's just the gathering of experience, and that we know is not sufficient. The other one, you know, Sean, the reflective practitioner, he's got a lot to be responsible for. But he's often misquoted because his construct of reflective practitioner is not somebody who goes and does something and then reflects. You know, that's not the model he talks about. His model is somebody who, as they are engaging in the process themselves, has got this almost intuitive questioning process that's going on. And for us, that's something that we really had to look at. What is this? Looking at practice, taking feedback, looking at the responses of learners in the act of teaching. Not abstract from it, but in the act of teaching. So it was really to tease out that kind of idea and say, so what does that mean? Because Sean wasn't talking about teaching when he was talking about this. He was talking about design engineers. So it's a very different construct that we needed to think about. It wasn't a social process he was talking about. He was talking about problem solving and design problem solving. So we looked again at other structures of expertise, and I really like this one. This is by 2 sociologists who were doing a study of scientific practice. They're not scientists, but they wanted to look at it, and they found it impossible to actually understand what the scientists were going on about. They just didn't understand it, even though they steeped themselves in the literature. They read about everything. They were looking at these research groups. They read everything they had published. They couldn't get a handle on it. And it made them then come back and question, so what do we mean by expertise? What is this essential thing about expertise? Now, the reason why I like it is the beer map knowledge. You know, what is, in this, what they're trying to do is saying, you know, there's a ubiquitous expertise that you've got as a professional. You have to interact, you have to reflect. Yes, we've got that. But then there's this ubiquitous tacit knowledge, but this specialised tacit knowledge. And from in that, we began to get clues with it. Beer map knowledge is the pub quiz. You know, it's the thing you mock up if you want to be on, what is it, Countless or something like that, these quiz shows. Eggheads, that's it. Eggheads. With it. But it's that kind of fairly fragmented, no real sense of it, but you can, you're good at answering quizzes. The second one, the popular understanding, is another way of looking at it. But their description of that is the kinds of understandings that are enshrined in policy and curricula guidelines, where all the problems are rounded out. You know, it says leaders must, teachers must, this is what they do. Now, that's what policy should be doing. They should give direction. But they don't help you tap into some of the real problems within it. You know, and as somebody from the university sector, clearly, therefore, you have to look at other literature. When I was looking at this and reading around it, the next one, which is the primary source knowledge, was a really wake-up call. Because what they're saying is, actually, that still doesn't take you that much further. It takes you a bit further. You know the issues. And this is what those sociologists did. They read and they read and they read. And they said, but we still can't get into this question of what it means to be an expert in a particular area. And what they then came up with was the kinds of ideas where you've got this specialist knowledge. Now, historically, the kind of expert is somebody who lives, you know, in a university, becomes a leading expert, reads and writes, experiments on it. But they said, actually, there's something else when you're talking about professional practice. And this expertise is something that we really want to tap into, is really understand. And it's the expertise that is shared by professionals. It comes from not just their experience, which is what Dreyfus and Dreyfus were arguing about. It comes from the sharing of that experience, the articulation of that experience, the questioning of that experience, not by outsiders, but those who are in the place of practice. In other words, it's about teachers arguing, thrashing out, and exploring their own practice. Now, we have to see that as the centre point of quality. We have to see that as the centre point of impact, not these things that happen outside of the classroom. So that's what we're trying to develop, is really think about this interactional expertise, teachers together, and also this what's called contributory expertise, which is the contribution to the understanding of others, the contribution to the subject, the contribution to the educational world and its practice. And it's how we both recognise the level of expertise that is absolutely required to be a successful teacher, describe that and be able to draw upon that in ways that build communities of practice, build ideas, build practice, test practice. And test practice in realistic ways, rather than look at quality, as I've said, as just adding to and continuing to add to, you know, a list of duties. That's not what this is about. It really is looking at this in depth with it. So it's to recognise that teachers are together to how we foster those kinds of things, but how we give teachers the voice into theory, that they are constructing theory. They are explaining how children best learn in particular circumstances. Because one of the real tensions around education is it's so deeply contextualised. You know, I say to the folk I work with, I can only give you general principles. That's my job, is to give you general principles. You have to translate them and understand them in your own context. And it's that making them relevant and constructing them in your own context and then working with others and then feeding back. Because that feedback loop has never been there. It's always, to my mind, been, you know, the expert coming in, telling, and moving out of that space. So what we're trying to do in this project is say, no, let's get into this space and let's utilise that space as the site of expertise, of the site of experimentation. Am I off time? Okay. She's got a rule to get me off. Yeah, shut her up. So these are what it's, you know, talking about kind of in detail. This idea of interactional expertise. Enculturation is the only way to master an expertise. In other words, you cannot be an expert by sitting out there. You cannot have this idea of pedagogic expertise. It has to be in a place where you work with others, talk with others, thrash out the problems. In other words, Sean's idea of that reflection in practice applied to teaching is a social process. It is a cognitive process, it's an intellectual skill, but it's also a deeply social process with it. And really tapping into that idea of getting people together to work on common issues, common problems, and engage with that to generate ideas into this contributory expertise, that it's not somebody sitting in an ivory tower. And it's, for me, what we've had is one way of communication there. What we want is two way. It's an interaction within it. So this is what we're testing in the Accomplished Teaching Project. And we're working now with local authorities and staff within Edinburgh, Stirling and Glasgow universities to try and work out from this theoretical framework, how do we valorise contributory expertise? Because I think it is about valorisation, right? We know it's there, we know it's practised, but it's an unexplained phenomenon. It's not something that's been peeled away before. And my concern about these kinds of policies, where you've got ministers of education who are not in a professional space around education, cherry picking, oh, that's a good idea, let's go and apply that. Or they've done that, we can play with that idea. They're not allowing, or they didn't allow in the first instance, teachers to have a voice. I think it is commendable now that they are bringing in people who are demonstrating this. But we still are not clear about what we mean by exemplary teachers. There's lots of definitions. The one I quite like is veteran teacher. I feel that myself. Yeah. Getting there. So we're working on groups of teachers, and it's practice-based. And we're using a kind of an inquiry model, but it's quite a loose inquiry model. It's more investigative than research. It's more hard questioning than research. It's more about let's thrash out the ideas, going back to that conversation metaphor with it. And they're working with university lecturers, and it's that kind of making the connections between in and out, making the connections between groups of teachers, but making the connections with ideas, making the connections with people whose job it is to gather ideas and provide those sources with it. And what we're looking at, and we're only in the early stages, and even setting up is proving hard work, just because of people's time, people's energies, just the logistics of that. But we are working to try and test that. And part of it is to look at these hard problems of process. But we also want to kind of look at outcomes. So what's the impact on that? And for me, one of the most important impacts is about how teachers are engaging with this and what they see, and what they see in terms of themselves. What's their identity? Schleicher in The Hague or wherever he is can talk about teachers as high-skilled knowledge workers. So what does that mean? What does that actually mean? It's one of those nice bylines that politicians like and academics like myself quite like, because then we can write three papers on it. But what does that actually mean in essence? And it's how we pull that out is what the project's about. Okay, I think that's me. Yes, yes, that's me. Yes. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Christine and Marjorie, to set us off for this afternoon. We're doing okay for time, so...